So as stated, the title of my presentation is Gardasil for Guys, Correlates of Intent to be Vaccinated. Now, there's been a lot of debate about the vaccination, the cost effectiveness of Gardasil or HPV vaccinations in general for men, but really part of the debate should be what are men's intention to be vaccinated and what are their attitudes towards vaccination. So this study really builds upon the work of some of our colleagues that have been doing this work for quite some time. But what's unique about our study is that we started in the summer of 2009 and ended in October of 2009, just as the FDA was approving the vaccine for men. So as most of you know, the human papillomavirus is one of the most common sexually transmitted infections. There's over 100 strains, with 30 of those strains being of low and high risk, exchanged through sexual contact. According to the CDC, 50% of sexually active adults will have HPV in their lifetime. However, 80% will be exposed to the virus. So in most cases, genital HPV infection is transient and has no clinical manifestations or sequelae. But when clinical manifestations do occur, the most common ones that we see are genital warts and cervical cell abnormalities. Also, if I'm going too fast or if you would like copies of my slides, please let me know at the end of the presentation. So what past studies have shown us is that men have reported lower HPV vaccination acceptance rates in comparison with women. Now keep in mind, most of these studies were done prior to the vaccine being available for men. So this is looking at men's attitudes towards vaccination. What we do know is that heterosexual men have demonstrated less knowledge and willingness to get vaccinated in comparison with gay and bisexual men. We've also found that in other vaccination studies, and Lindley in particular has looked at flu vaccination, looking at a diverse sample, that lower rates of vaccination have been reported amongst African Americans in comparison to whites. In the UK, there was a study done that showed that awareness of HPV has demonstrated to be lower among ethnic minorities in comparison with whites. So if you open up Common Magazine, this is just a print that I got out of Essence Magazine, you'll see that now the target is both young men and young women, or boys and girls as well. And so we're all familiar with this One Less campaign, right? And so it's interesting that around 2009, right when the FDA approved it, Merck in particular was ready to go with their advertisements. So as I said, this study that we conducted, we started in the summer of 2009, and it ended just as the vaccine became approved. So what we know is that to date, there's little known about men's beliefs and willingness to receive the human papillomavirus vaccine. And there is a lack of post-FDA approved acceptance studies among males 18 to 26 years of age. And this is problematic because if we're trying to promote vaccine programs, intervention programs, or promotion programs, we don't know how to target these young males yet. So we're trying to get some more information. So the goal of the study was to identify correlates of intention to receive the HPV vaccine among a diverse sample of men. And again, we're really building upon the work that has been done in the past. So what I'm going to present to you this morning is really part of a larger mixed method study. I'm going to make a plug for my student, Marquette, back there, who's going to present the qualitative findings this afternoon in a poster. But I'm just going to present some of the quantitative findings. So we recruited college males from two universities located in the southeastern United States. We gave them a survey via ACASI, audio computer assisted self-administered interview. The survey lasted about 30 to 45 minutes. Now, the survey items, we developed some of them, but most of them we took from a study that Rick Crosby out of the University of Kentucky did for women. So we assessed the beliefs, attitudes, and intent to receive the HPV vaccine for males. And the males were compensated $30 for participation. So we just did general bivariate associations between the various measures and men's intent to be vaccinated. in the next 12 months. So we looked at these via t-tests, and then the significant associations were entered into a multiple regression. A couple of the men, too, specifically did not answer some key demographic questions, so we excluded their data from the subsequent analyses. So our total N was 148 for the analyses. So this is just a breakdown of our sample. We had a good percentage of freshmen and juniors, followed by sophomores and seniors and a couple of grad students. Most of our sample, 54%, were African American, followed by 21% who were Asian or Pacific Islander, 19% white, and 6% identified as biracial or other. 90% of our sample self-identified as heterosexual. The other 5% identified as homosexual, and another 5% identified as bisexual. So, in looking at males' intent to receive HPV vaccination in the next 12 months, we had a 6-point Likert scale question, and this was just, you could see the breakdown of the results. So the majority of the young men said that they were somewhat likely to receive the vaccination. Now, I just want to press on you that this was done in September, August, July of 2009, and so people were starting to know more and more about the vaccine for men. So the time period is very important here. So what the t-test showed us was that there were a higher intent to be vaccinated among those men who were 21 to 24 years old in comparison to those who were 18 to 20. There was a higher percentage of those who were willing to be vaccinated amongst those who disagreed with the statement, "Getting Gardasil would embarrass me. It is a vaccine for women." So those who disagreed with that statement were more likely to say that they would be vaccinated. There was no significant racial differences, and the cost of the vaccine, we all know that it's pretty costly, and one of the key questions that came up quite often was, is my insurance company going to pay for this? But the cost did not yield any significant differences in intent to be vaccinated. Oh, that's fun. So that's what happens when you convert from Mac to PC. So the linear regression, or maybe it's a new analysis that I made up, but the multiple linear regression actually was significant. So this was an age-adjusted model, and I'm going to talk about the three correlates, perhaps, that were significant in the model. Ah, wonderful. Okay, so one of the variables was... Okay, so our outcome variable, again, intent to be vaccinated, was associated with ever having oral genital sex, such that those reporting oral genital sex were more willing to receive Gardasil in the next 12 months. So if they had oral sex, they were more likely to receive the vaccine, or at least reported being more likely. Intent was also associated with perceived susceptibility to HPV, such that those classified as having relatively higher perceived susceptibility were more likely to receive Gardasil in the next 12 months. And that really should be more likely to say that they would receive Gardasil. Lastly, intent was associated with the statement, "The HPV vaccine is so new that I should wait a while. Before deciding about getting vaccinated." So specifically, those disagreeing with that statement were more willing to receive the vaccine in the next 12 months. And these are the only variables in our multivariate that came up significant. We had a number of variables. And this makes sense. This is consistent with previous findings. So the young men who have had or who reported having oral genital sex and those with greater perceptions of susceptibility to HPV may have greater intent to soon receive the HPV vaccine newly approved for young men. But we know that there's a difference between intent and actually going out and getting vaccinated. So a barrier to intent may be the relatively new introduction of the vaccine to the male population. What we found, and this is more in the qualitative data, and I don't want to steal Marquette's thunder, but what we found is that a lot of men did not understand how the vaccine worked. They thought that it could cure HPV. So there's still a lot of misconceptions about how the vaccine works or what a vaccine does. So, you know, this research and some of the other research that's out there really can be used by doctors or physicians, because a lot of the young men stated that they trusted their physicians, particularly their family physicians. So if the physician recommended that they should get it, they were more likely to say, well, perhaps I'll consider it. We really need to delve more into the low perceptions of perceived risk. Given that this is the most common sexually transmitted infection, more people should be aware of it. And I have students all the time telling me that they have never heard of HPV. So we really need to tackle that. In addition, research investigating effective approaches to promoting this biomedical innovation is warranted. So how are we going to target these young men? What are the messages that we're going to give them, and how are we going to effectively give these messages? So a couple of limitations, and again, this was a very exploratory study. We used a convenience sample. It was a cross-sectional study design. And again, we looked at the young men's intent. What would be wonderful is if we can go back and actually see who's getting vaccinated. And it would be wonderful if we can get the same guys. Fingers crossed, I don't know if that's going to happen yet, but we'll see. So you all know who this is. This woman, Henrietta Lacks. Because of her, we know so much more about HPV. And really, her cells actually helped to develop the HPV vaccine. So a big thank you to her. And this study was funded by Merck Pharmaceuticals. So I have that to disclose. So I think we have time for a couple of questions. Okay, thank you. Yes. Yeah, so it really, I think part of it is the population, and that some of them, given that it's a young population, some of them are still covered by their parents' insurance. And that really was the key question. Is the vaccine going to be covered by insurance? So I don't know if some of them know how much it costs yet, because they did ask that as well. So I think that's why it didn't play a role. I think very few of them knew that it cost so much money per injection, and that there were three doses that were needed. So I think that's why that didn't pan out. I think, but I'm sure someone else could enlighten us. Yes.
The question on the perceived higher risk in those who have oral genital sex, did that differentiate between which oral genital sex and the word they think they might be more likely to get up from woman's genital?
So that is an excellent question. No, it's an excellent question. We did not ask that. And that's something that we should go back and examine, but it's an excellent question.
I didn't know if you necessarily.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Great question. Thank you. So the question was, so the men who said that they were more likely to be vaccinated were those who had oral genital sex. And the question, if I'm not mistaken, is did it differ? Pardon?
Which type
of oral sex? Right. Yes, sir.
Thank you. I enjoyed your presentation. I have a question, though. The cost effectiveness of this incidence has been far from settled, and I'm wondering, yeah, if the board recommend to physicians that they encourage this? Can you speak to kind of the latest data concerning whether or not this really is a cost effective policy?
Yeah, so I cannot speak in great detail about that, but I think just a couple of days ago, there was a study that came out, I want to say in JAMA, that talked about the cost effectiveness of this. It's still going back and forth in a debate. And then the question becomes, who really should we be targeting? Because some people think that it should be gay and bisexual men over heterosexual men. So it's still a question. I really can't speak to it. I'm sure someone else might be able to inform us a little bit more, but you know, there's new studies being published every day. So a couple of days ago, Chuck Jama, yes. It was susceptibility to HPV, and again, what astonished me and what's more in the qualitative data is that a lot of them did not know that the connection between HPV and cervical cancer or penile cancer or the other types of cancers. So susceptibility just to HPV is what we asked about. I saw another hand back there.
My question was kind of back to the technical effects question. Is that about the time you did this study, the link between HPV and oropharyngeal cancer was getting a lot of press?
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you actually looked to see if perceived susceptibility and participational effects, how closely those two variables are correlated within someone. So if you're seeing actually men who have a kind of sex that has been publicized as at risk,
I'm sure we did that analysis. And I need to go back and look at the correlation between that to see if there would be some multicollinearity there. But one of the things was that we did ask about other types of sexual behavior, and it was this oral sex that came out to be significant in the model over any other types of sexual intercourse. But yeah, it's an excellent point, excellent point. Any other questions? So once again, anyone who has any further information, this is research that we will be continuing, so please do feel free to contact me and I'll be available afterwards. Thank you very much.